are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I don't know, they're a little too famous for me. Like, you're the step down from famous. Like, you're famous, but you're not, like, up at that territory yet.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
If they're, like, A fantasy baseball analysts, like, A grade, I'm, like, a B grade, and you're, like, what?
No, I think you're, like, an A minus. And then me, I'm probably in more of the D plus, C minus area.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm getting there, though. I mean, I started off as, like, a low F. So, I mean, I'm getting there. Nobody stays healthy forever except for LeBron James, who's an alien, in my opinion.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 333 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
Oh my gosh, me and you for a podcast? I didn't even know that this still existed. I'm super excited.
I'm as excited as well. It feels like forever since you and I have had a chance to sit down and talk about baseball. You know, or really yes. Anything outside of maybe some business related stuff off the air.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute, but you know, we want to make sure our downloads stay good. So we're trying to bring out the big guns, you know, the original founders, you and I, we're trying to kind of make sure that everything stays right. So let's do it.
Well, speaking of which, I guess we should talk about a couple different things that are happening with Friends of Fantasy Benefits outside of like the really cool stuff. Like, you know, we've got a bunch of, off-season podcasts being planned. We're going to do our team previews from last year. We're also going to do the prospect minutes, putting together a draft guide that will be available for purchase for just a few bucks on places like Amazon and iTunes and things like that. But we have some actual like business-related stuff that I just wanted to kind of drop and kind of talk about. One is something that's a little bit sad. One is something that is really cool, though it may be a little annoying for some people out there. But, you know, so let's start real quick with the really sad news. Eli Rosenzweig, one of the few original people that was really with us at the get-go of Friends of Fantasy Benefits, and he was an owner here, has decided to leave FWFB. In other pursuits. You know, this was a decision that he made that he felt he had he wasn't able to give what he wanted to Friends of Fantasy Benefits. So he has sold his shares to Mike, Matt, and I, who are still owners. He is going to be moving on. We will miss him dearly. We all still consider him a great friend. I will personally miss him. I did the football podcast with him. I did the Survivor podcast with him. Obviously, the baseball podcast. And I got to, you know, listen to a lot of his basketball podcasts. So he will be missed. Hopefully, there aren't too many people out there that only listen for Eli, because I think we have some pretty amazing voices still here at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, and we're going to be adding some new ones over the course of the next year. So, just wanted to, you know, kind of pour one out for our homie, Eli Rosenzweig.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, he passed away, and definitely will be messed up. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, my God. I hope that doesn't happen. Knock on wood.
You can still tweet at him at Eli FWFB on Twitter.
Yeah, he won't change it at all.
Yeah, I doubt he'll even check it. But if you want to voice your displeasure with Eli not being on the show anymore, tweet at him at Eli FWFB and maybe guilt him back into coming back. So,
or if you're happy he's leaving, just tell him, hey, thanks for the great job of leaving.
You were ruining the show, and now I'm glad you're gone. You know, something like that. So, we will miss him, and I just wanted to – I didn't feel it would be right to just not acknowledge the fact that he was no longer a part of Friends of Fantasy Benefits. So I wish him luck in all of his future endeavors, we will continue to record mediocre podcasts in his absence. The other thing that I wanted to mention is, as you heard at the top of this episode and may have heard in the top of the last couple episodes – we have advertising now. So we have joined the Blog Talk radio platform. And they are giving us advertising. And while that may be annoying to some of you, the ads are usually only 30 seconds to a minute, and you can, you know, hit that, you know, 15-second, 30-second forward on your phone or listening device to skip through it. It's going to be adding ad revenue for us, which is an important thing because it allows us to continue to do this podcast for free and do all the things we do at Friends of Fantasy Benefits for free. So I hope that's not too annoying for you people. We are super excited to be a part of the Blog Talk Radio network and platform. I just wanted to mention that that's why you're hearing advertising now. It's a way for us to supplement all the time that we put into this, because I know I put a ton of time into it. Mike puts a little bit of time into it. But seriously, we appreciate you guys sticking with us, even if the ads get a little bit annoying. All right. Well, let's talk about some fantasy baseball, though. We had a couple things that have happened over the course of the last couple days. So before we get into kind of our topic, I want to touch on two major moves that happened. And the first one happened earlier today. That is Shohei Ohtani signing with the Angels. So, Mike, what are your thoughts on this deal? And where are you ranking Ohtani for fantasy purposes?
Thoughts on the deal. I mean, the Angels now, I think, are a top 10 minor league system, which you would definitely not have said last year at this time. So adding Kevin Maiton and then getting somebody like Ohtani certainly boosts the Angels' future. And honestly, like, I feel good for Mike Trout a little bit now, because he was stuck in a place where we really didn't know if they would contend for the next few years here. And now he at least has another really star-studded type of prospect next to him that is obviously going to contribute in a major way this year. In terms of ranking him, it's really tough. I know that you have been pretty vocal about different leagues having different scoring and having him be in the format differently. Like, he might be two players in one site. He also might be one player on another site. I'm pretty steadfast in not taking him in the first round, even if he is a pitcher and a hitter eligible in one site. I just don't know how the hitting is really going to translate yet. I think that he is a stud. I'm not going to sit here and say that he's not talented. I've watched the videos. I've listened to all the reports. I've read all the reports. I understand that he has 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and his raw power is amazing. So, like, we're looking at a different type of prospect than we've ever seen in the past. With that said, though, I'm not willing to take him in the first round because I just don't know how he might be used. He might be used every 6 day. The Angels could certainly go with a 6-man rotation easily. So we can't really project him to be over 150 innings pitch, can we? Like, reasonably? Possibly, I guess. But that you're taking a first round pick on a gamble like that, I don't really feel comfortable. And then with the hitting, I don't know if he's going to DH every day that he's not pitching. Is he going to DH 3 of the other, you know, 6 days of the week that he's not pitching? Is he going to DH 2 days? Is he going to DH every day? If somebody gave me in a crystal ball told me that he was going to end up hitting every single day that he wasn't pitching, then yeah, I might be more inclined to take him in the first round. But I just can't feel comfortable with it right now because I don't see the Angels doing that. If they do, then certainly take a gamble in a shallow format like a 10-teamer. Yeah, maybe I would take him in the first round if he was available as one player that was eligible for both hitting and pitching. But at least for now,
and had daily moves on that site, because weekly league, it doesn't matter if you can toggle him back and forth.
Yeah, and that's obvious. But yes, if you have daily moves and you're able to use that flexibility, then obviously that is a massive boost to somebody's value, an unprecedented boost to somebody's value, one that we've never really seen in fantasy baseball, at least current fantasy baseball, the way it's been played. So could he be an absolutely crazy difference maker for you and a fantasy team? Absolutely. And if that's something you're willing to kind of take in the first round, then I really don't mind. I'm not going to get upset with anybody, but I wouldn't take him number one overall. I hear some people saying top three. You know, it's a lot to ask of a guy coming over when you don't know what the role is, and you definitely need to know what your format is, especially based on whatever site you play on, whether it's daily moves or not, just all of those type of things. So it all kind of, it depends on the situation, but overall, I'm definitely not down on him. I'm very excited about him coming over. I think the Angels are in a much better spot since he's coming over, and I think that brings some more excitement back to the Angels, some excitement that we've kind of lacked from them the last couple of years. So I'm certainly excited to watch what happens, and I'm kind of geared up for this season for them. And from fantasy, I'm kind of in a wait and see approach.
I think this is a really nice example of why I hate drafting in leagues super early, because we have no clue. Like, there are going to be people who start drafting. Like, I know I'm going to be in a draft here in the next couple weeks for the RotoWire Dynasty League that Matt and I were invited to. And so, like, I don't even know where to put Ohtani, really. I think right now I am going – if he was just a pitcher, I'd put him, like, in the Rich Hill, Lance McCullers area.
You Which know? Is what, top 40, top 50?
I think, like, top between 30 and 40.
Yeah.
You know, a place – it's going to be a huge tier of these guys that I think have elite skills – but I don't know how comfortable I feel penciling in more than 130 to 140 innings.
Sure.
And I think that's where he should go as a pitcher. I think, you know, if he were to get 180, 190 innings, I think you could reasonably say this guy is, you know, has the upside of a top, you know, 15 pitcher. But I really don't know if I buy that he's going to be anywhere close to that. Now, he pitched only 25 and a third innings last year in Japan. The previous three seasons, he had pitched 155, 160, 140. So I think there's a pretty good chance that he gets to about 140. And I think he can be a very valuable guy. But as a pitcher alone, I think that still keeps him out just outside of my top 30, with obviously some downside, because this is a guy who's dealt with injury. And we have no idea how he's going to translate physically to pitching every fifth day, if they even allow him to pitch every fifth day, you know. And then on top of that, you know, if you're playing on a site like Fantrax, it's going to let you toggle back and forth between hitting and pitching. You know, how many at-bats are we really going to kind of schedule out for him? You know,
I'd say, I mean, he's only had the last couple of years in Japan. I don't think he's crossed the 400 plate appearance barrier.
No.
So, like, how can
he
we?
He had his most was in 2016 when he was healthy. He pitched 140 innings, I believe. Yes, 140 innings on the dot and had 382 plate appearances. I think for me, that feels like the ceiling of what we could expect at the major league level. So, I mean, we're talking about a guy that could potentially be a top, let's just say a top 30 pitcher, and then add, you know, 15 home runs.
10 stolen bases, 8 stolen bases, depending on how much the Angels run.
I don't believe they're going to let him run. I just don't, you know.
Why?
Why would you let a guy who's got injury history in the past and is going to be pitching for you every 5 or 6 days run on the base paths?
Well, he has really good speed, A. B, the Angels led the league in stolen base attempts per game last year.
Do you really want a guy who's supposed to be, you know, the main who's supposed to be leading this rotation next year, you know, is probably the number one or number two pitcher, you know, diving back into bags or diving into bags when he's stealing bases? No, they're not going to give him a. Now, he may just take green light, or he may just take bases at times, but I don't think they're going to green light him in by any stretch of the imagination. And I think if you think you're going to get 10 to 15 stolen bases, you're fooling yourself. I would project 5.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand that rationale, but we also aren't in Mike Socha's mind. Like, we don't know how they're going to use him. So I'm just saying what the ability is. If he had 400 plate appearances in the majors next year, I think that he could top out at 10 to 15 stolen bases. That's just my opinion. Now, do they give him the green light? Do they not? I mean, that's completely speculative. You don't know what they're going to do because we've never seen somebody like this before. But, I mean, if you're being reasonable about it, like, if you're shooting for the moon, why not? Especially if you can toggle him and you have daily moves, like,
yeah,
why not take him in the first round?
I don't think I can advocate that. Like, I honestly, like, in a 15-team league or even a 12-team league, I'm not taking him in my top 100.
Top 100?
No, I'm just not.
We flipped on this because we talked about this a couple weeks ago just in passing, and I was very low on the prospects of Ohtani, and you were kind of higher than I was, and now it's kind of really turned the other way. But I understand it, too. Like, not taking him outside of the top 100, fine, because if you're looking at it pitching-wise, like, especially if you're taking him as two separate players – you definitely, I'd say top 30, 40 starters is even pushing it, depending on if the six-man rotation works. Or if they go to a five-man, I definitely think that bumps them up. But right now, I'm projecting them as a six-man rotation. So you can't take them outside of the or ahead of the top 30 or 40 starters. And then as a hitter by himself, if we put him at conservatively 350 plate appearances, we'll say 12 home runs and like 4 stolen bases. That puts him as a below league average. That's a platoon player. That's Taylor Motter. you know? So like, that's to me what you're looking at. If you were to take them separately, you're going to get a guy that's maybe going to top out as a top 30 starter, maybe higher if he ended up getting the innings, which I don't think he would. And then a part-time hitter, which really I can see him in a shallow format, like a 12 team league where he's taken as two separate players, not even being owned as a hitter. And then also, you know, being owned as a pitcher, but more as like a starting pitcher, 3, 4, 5, which would probably go more into your top 100 thing. But that's more separating them out. If they're together, I don't know how you can not take them inside the top 100.
There's so much risk. I mean, we have, like, I know a lot of people are like, well, this is what he projects. This is what, you know, and a lot of people said the same thing about, you know, Eric Thames when he was coming back. We have no idea. Let's be honest. I mean, we can try to project all we want, but this guy didn't even play very much last year, or at least pitch very much last year. We have no idea what we're going to get from him. I think this is like the epitome of a boomer bust type pick. And I think the people who are going to be taking him inside the top 50s, top 40 and stuff like that in industry leagues are doing it because they want to talk about it.
Is there a chance he gets eligibility anywhere in the field?
I guess he could technically get it at outfield, but I think you're only going to see it in leagues like Yahoo where they have like five games in games, you know, played. I just can't imagine. I mean, let's talk about this from a team concept too. I mean, does this destroy CJ Cron's value?
It could. It definitely could. But at the same time, like I don't buy that they're going to play him or DH him every single day that he's not pitching. Like, flat out, a pitcher needs rest. Like, if you throw him 110 pitches, you can't have him go out and DH the next day. That's unreasonable. There's just no way you can do that. And then you also have bullpen days, bullpen sessions. I would assume that the Angels are going to use him as somebody that DHs 2 to 3 times a week, maybe 4 max, and then also pitches. But really, I can see his pitch count being, especially at the beginning of the season, somewhere in the 80 to 90 range, you know, and then maybe kind of stretching him out a bit as the season goes on. The more I'm talking it out, the more I'm down on him, but apparent.
Like, I think from a long-term perspective, I think maybe like, 2019, 2020, if, you know, sites are still allowing people to toggle in between, because I think this is kind of a trial run year for a lot of sites. They're trying to figure out what the best thing is. And I think next year we may have some more uniformity around the industry in terms of where you can play him. But I think if for some reason you're able to toggle him back and forth in 2019, I think then you're talking about a guy potentially, especially in daily leagues, that is a top 20 pick. Because I feel like, okay, we'll have a really good understanding of where his innings workload is going to be, how they can use him as a hitter. You know, but for me, I just think the hype itself is going to outblow any sort of potential reward. I mean, unless he's just Babe Ruth, you know, out the gate.
Called Babe Ruth, so.
Yeah, no, yeah. But I mean, he's the Japanese Babe Ruth. But I can't imagine that he isn't going. There's going to be at least one person in every league that I'm in that isn't overpaying on Ohtani this year. And
yeah,
so
the problem is everybody that's talking about him is so hyped about it. So, like, you're right in the sense that everyone that is really kind of studying and digging into his actual projection and his raw stats and what they could kind of translate into, they're all over him. And when you go to the ESPNs and the MLB.coms, they're talking about him being just such a stud prospect in all these different ways. They're essentially calling him Yu Darvish. Like, they're comparing his curveball to Yu Darvish, which I've seen graded anywhere from a 70 scale to a 50, you know, an average pitch to above average. Some call it borderline elite, but some are calling him an elite pitcher, and then some are also calling him an elite bat as well. And I just don't think that we can really, I just don't feel like we even got this much hype on Jose Abreu. In his first year that he came, he did great. I mean, actually his first 2 years, he was really steady and somebody that we really liked. I can see that for Ohtani, but at the same time, it's really super risky. So yes, I mean, it really depends on your scoring format and whether the site that you play on allows you to toggle them and whether you're allowed to have daily moves in the first place. But I would say in the perfect scenario where he is one player and you can toggle him and it's a daily moves type league, I would say that I would comfortably put him in the third round somewhere in there.
Okay. Let's move on. Let's talk about D. Gordon getting traded for International bonus money and a few prospects that aren't really
one was hyped pretty well in Baseball HQ, at least. Sure. Ryan Bloomfield, friend of the show, the Mariners straight away, their number two prospect, essentially.
But
so,
I mean, that number two prospect in some in deeper systems would be more like a 15, number 15 or 10 prospect.
More than likely, yes.
Like, I mean, I'd say in half the systems in Major League Baseball, he's not a top 10 he would not be a top 10 prospect. So we're not talking about a guy who's a top 100 dude, especially for fantasy purposes.
You're right. Go ahead.
But let's talk about D. Gordon, because, I mean, they get the money because I think a lot of people thought that they were probably the front runner for Ohtani. Now they can go and reload that minor league system by poaching off all those Braves prospects that are still out there. But they kind of miss out on that. But they do get D. Gordon for really not very much. I mean, let's be honest. It was an absolute steal. The Marlins are in complete just dump mode right now. They're going to move him to center field, is what it sounds like, unless they decide to trade him, which I wouldn't put past Jerry DePoto. What do you think about D. Gordon in Seattle?
I love it. I mean, I do see some people talking about his run production kind of spiking since he's in Seattle, and I don't really agree with that. Because, I mean, technically, Seattle did a worse job of scoring runs last year than Miami did. Mind you, we can't really bake in Stanton hitting, you know, almost 60 home runs every year. But regardless, I love D. Gordon. I've loved him since he really has been in the Dodgers organization. And other than that kind of blip on the radar with the whole steroid stuff, he's been a stud fantasy player. And especially when you talk about speed. Last year, this really kind of affects AL NL only, because in AL only last year, the leading stolen base guy was Whit Merrifield at 34. Mm-hmm. Well, D. Gordon has stolen 58 or more stolen bases in three of the last 4 years, and probably would have hit the 50 mark if he had played all of 2016. So hitting at the top of the lineup, love it. He's going to continue doing that. He's going to continue to steal bases because Seattle really isn't shy of doing that. And they have more speed on their lineup than they ever have before, if it stays the same. So really, from a fantasy perspective, I like it maybe even more than I do the last couple of years, because I think that he has just been a safe commodity that we can rely on a pretty good amount, definitely for stolen bases and even for average and really run scoring and stuff. So overall, I think D. Gordon is a borderline. A couple years ago, he was being taken around like pick 15-ish. I think that he should be taken above pick 20. If he lasts anywhere past pick 20 in your drafts, I think that somebody is doing it wrong in your league, and you should definitely capitalize.
And that's where I was when we did the two early mocks. I think at the end of last season, I said, like, he's a borderline first rounder for me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a step back from that and downgrade him just a little because of this move. Mainly because we have no idea what his defense is going to look like in center field. And I know he is extremely fast, and like that will definitely help. But I mean, we're talking about a guy that, I mean, has he ever played outfield? And now he's supposed to man center field. I mean, yeah. That to me is screaming for some real issues. I think there's a chance he could lose plate appearances late. You know, for defensive replacement, if he's not very good, I think we need to really see him play some outfield before we can feel really comfortable that he is going to play every day. So I love D. Gordon, and I don't have a problem with anybody taking him inside of the top 20. And I think what you're saying is right. If he plays even just a passable center field, then I think. It's not like the Mariners have cared that much about outfield defense in the past. So I think even if he's just passable in center field, then we don't have much to worry about. But I think you and I will be the high men on D. Gordon coming into 2018. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because in a lot of the mock drafts I was in, outside of George Bissell taking him, I think 15th overall in the two early mocks. He fell, you know, toward the back end of the second round in a lot of drafts, and I think that is a steal considering what he brings you speed wise and average as well. And I think he's going to be in front of a pretty dynamic lineup.
Yeah, speed plays nowadays. Like, it's just, if somebody is going to steal you 20 or more bases, then you have to really bump them up. That's why Charlie Blackmon, I think, is just such a safe first round pick. Even and I just looked at all of the mock drafts and like kind of the ADP together that was put together by you on FanGraphs, and the fact that Blackmon is being taken ahead of somebody like Bryce Harper kind of makes me happy, because you know really speed plays nowadays, you have to use it.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, let's just move on. Let's talk about kind of our subject. I was going to bring up kind of some of the other signings, but I'll save that for the podcast with you, me, and Matt. That'll be on Monday. So, but I wanted to get into kind of let's wrap up 2017, and I wanted to for each of us to come up with two players that we were wrong on and two players that we were right on from the season, and maybe kind of just, you know, each kind of talk about what happened, why we were wrong, and what we have learned from either being right or wrong. So, Mike, I'll let you start. Give me one player you were right on in 2017.
Well, I definitely got to be boasting about my boy Eric Hosmer. And I know to a lot of people's chagrin, I was super high on him coming into last year. And, you know, I even made a couple bets about it and everything. But when it was all said and done, he was a top 30 player. And that all kind of came with some adjustments mid-season. I know Darius, who is one of the smartest, you know, analysts that I know, was pretty down on him prior to the season starting, but then kind of came on board once he saw some of the swing adjustments that he made and everything. But overall, there's not much that I can really learn here from Hosmer. Hosmer is just a steady contributor in multiple categories. Now, I am interested in where he goes coming into this season, but I won't be nearly as high on him. I didn't look at where his average draft position was according to the mocks that you guys did, but I'm assuming it was fairly high, probably in the top 70 or so. And to me, he doesn't offer enough power for you to take him again this year, but based on where he was going last year and based on where he's finished in the past, I felt really good about it. And while he didn't even really do what I thought he would, he still ended up being a top 30 player, and I'm pretty happy about that. Stable, a lot of runs scored, 20 plus bombs for two straight years now. And while the stolen bases weren't as high as I thought they would be, in short, I was pretty right on him, and you know, I'll give myself a little pat on the back for that. So Hosmer for life.
Yeah, I figured that may be one of the ways you were going. In terms of where he went in the two early mocks, or the Mason mocks, as they've been renamed.
Mason mocks?
Yes, Derek Van Riper and Todd Zoll over at RotoWire have determined that they should be called the Mason mocks.
Are you famous now? Is that the way it's going? Are you famous?
I mean, I've always been famous in my own mind.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even know this. Listeners, if he is famous, if Justin is actually famous, please tweet me and let me know when this happened, because I didn't know that we were I didn't know Justin was having the Mason mocks now. Like, what is going on?
You can tweet Mike at Mike Warner FWFB. So Eric Hosmer went had an ADP of 69. He was tied with Alex Bregman, who had the exact same ADP. Guys going in front of Eric Hosmer: AJ Pollock, Whit Merrifield, Christian Yelich, Byron Buxton. Guys going directly behind him: Craig Kimbrel, Jonas Cespedes, Justin Turner, Jake Arrieta. I almost feel like there's a little bit of disrespect, and maybe that could be to do with the fact that he is a free agent. We don't know where he's going to sign. But you have to think, no matter where he signs, it's a better at least ballpark and team around him than Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, if he goes to the Yankees.
Unless he re-signs in Kansas City. If he re-signs in Kansas City, then yeah, I'm pushing him down.
No, there's no way he re-signs in Kansas City. My biggest problem with Hosmer, and why I don't think that his upside is much higher than what he did last year, which, again, was an amazing year, like almost 320 average, which is really the main difference. And when you look at HQ's expected batting average metric, it was supposed to be more in the 300 range. So, I mean, you drop, you know, 20 ticks of batting average, then we're talking a little bit differently here. But regardless, his power upside isn't much more than what we saw last year, 25, which is about league average in itself, because he has such a high ground ball rate. And yes, he made some adjustments, but it still didn't really translate into the ground ball rate being better. That's why I never will be that high on Christian Yelich power projection going into the future years, because he just hits the ball too much on the ground. But regardless of where Hosmer goes, the power won't be that much higher because he just has such a big ground ball tilt. Will he have a good batting average? More than likely. Will he steal a few bases? Absolutely. But when you're factoring in the 98 runs and the 94 RBIs, that really is more lineup dependent. and we just don't know where that is yet. So I'd say 70 is fair for right now. I think last year he was going about 60, so you're looking at a little bit of a downtick, but you're probably right as well. Because he doesn't have a home yet, we don't really know. But yes, the ballpark should be better, but I don't think that's as big of a deal as it probably should be.
All right. I guess I'll talk about a guy that I was extremely down on coming into the year that was getting a ton of hype, and people were overdrafting, and I was trying to pump the brakes, and not a ton of people listened to me, but he was in one of my bold predictions that Dansby Swanson would not be a top 25 shortstop. He was not. He ended up, I don't even know where he finished on the player radar. I still got to do my my kind of wrap-up for my bold predictions article.
Dansby Swanson finished 48th on the shortstop player radar.
Yeah, there you go.
That's behind the likes of Miguel Rojas, Eric Ibar, Pat Valleca, Adini Hecheverria, whichever. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think one of the things that we as a fantasy industry tend to do is overhype young players, especially guys who are highly rated on prospect lists. And I'm not talking about like the ones that Matt does or the ones that like James Anderson over at RotoWire does or other
Ralph
people.
Lipschitz.
Yeah, I'm talking about real life prospect lists, the ones that are done on MLB.com, the ones that are done on MinorLeagueBaseball.com, on Baseball America. Those are real life prospect lists that don't, you know, care about the fantasy game. They're projecting, you know, defense. They're projecting, you know, where the guy is going. Or what the guy's value to his overall team is going to be. And I think Dansby Swanson will be at some point a very good real-life shortstop. I don't think he's ever going to be a very great real-life or a fantasy shortstop. And that's something that I said. And this year, he definitely struggled. You know, he hit .232, .312, .324, had 6 home runs and 3 stolen bases. And I mentioned that, you know, even the projections, like the rosy projections for him, had him, you know, going like 10-10 with like a .270 average, and everybody's taking this guy as a top 15 shortstop, and I didn't understand why. It didn't make any sense to me, and some people were taking him in the top 10 at shortstop, and I didn't understand, like, why would you look at the projections and go, well, this guy's going to outperform, you know, these projections. He had only had 45 plate appearances at AAA, 145 plate appearances at the major league level. And, like, his AAA numbers and AA numbers weren't very good to begin with.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that take. So, I mean, there's nothing really I can add. I'm not really in for this year either. I just, there's more upside elsewhere. So, I mean, we keep it pretty short and sweet. But, yeah, you were 100% right. And I think you were one of few that were really kind of touting that, saying, like, I'm staying away from Dansby. And there was a lot of people last year at this time that were very, very excited about him. So, good on you, sir.
Well, and I think that's something to remember when we start talking about other prospects coming up, that not every prospect, one, is going to translate right away, and two, that we have to remind ourselves that there are other factors in why these prospects get overblown. You know, a guy that Matt and you talked about on the prospect pod the other day is Luis Urias, and I see the same kind of thing for him. People are talking about him as a top 10 fantasy prospect, where a lot of his... a lot of the reason why he's ranked so highly on other prospect lists is because he's going to be a good defensive player, and he's going to put up good averages, which is very important for real life. He's going to get on base. He doesn't have much pop or much speed, and somehow people are trying to translate that this guy is going to be an elite fantasy player, and that's just not the case.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about him on the prospect show, so you can listen to it there.
I'm just backing you guys up. So
I appreciate it.
let's move on to a player each that we were wrong on, and I'll start this on this one, Miguel Cabrera. It's not even just Miguel Cabrera. You know, you and I kind of briefly talked about this before we started recording. I missed out on an entire position. I came in and I was leading the charge on
first base is shallow.
First base is super shallow. Like, you're gonna want to take your first baseman early, and Miguel Cabrera is a steal. And I think this is a, at least for me, and I think it should be for the entire fantasy industry, is maybe we overblow position scarcity at times. and that things tend to work themselves out one way or another. Now, it doesn't mean we can't look at one position being deeper than another and one position having more players that we like and would want on our team than other ones. And so maybe we tweak things in our ranks and stuff like that little by little. But at the end of the day, we don't know until things are all said and done how deep a position is going to be. People are going to emerge. People like Logan Morrison and Ryan Zimmerman are going to reemerge. And, you know, obviously, I don't think anybody could have foreseen the fall off in Miguel Cabrera. I mean, a lot of it had to do with injury and the Tigers just not being very good. But ultimately, he had a back issue that cropped up out of nowhere. I mean, we all thought he was going to come down a little bit in value from 2016. You know, obviously, it was a huge loss what happened in 2017 in terms of he trying to play through a serious back issue. I will probably buy a share or two because I think he is going to be completely undervalued. And I think he still has the upside to hit, 30 home runs with a .300 average at the major league level. And I think this will be the first year you don't have to pay for it. It's all going to be about health for him. So I apologize to anybody who took Miguel Cabrera based on my advice.
Well, I was right there with you. I mean, based on his track record the few years prior, I mean, the 12 years prior, whichever way you want to look at it, like, he's always been a stable fantasy commodity. So we knew at some point the injuries might happen because he is hitting his mid-30s and nobody stays healthy forever, except for LeBron James, who's an alien, in my opinion. But, like, Miguel Cabrera is somebody that I think I will take a couple shares of next year. I do get scared about herniated discs because I know plenty of people that have dealt with that issue or issues, and it doesn't typically work out very well. So when you're using – he also had a hip issue, a groin issue. Like, when you're – really using all those parts of your body to swing a bat ferociously, I mean, like, that ends up not being a great thing. So, yes, there is a ton of risk with Miguel Cabrera more than ever before. But at the same time, like, looking through your ADPs here in the Mason mocks, the famous Mason mocks, mm-hmm. he's going in the top 80 and, right next to Andrew McCutchen. Those are two guys that if they are healthy for at least 50% of the season, are going to, do well for you. So I agree.
And I would feel better about taking McCutchen there. Yeah. Or like Chris Davis or Domingo Santana or a couple guys going right below him. But like Eduardo Nunez is right there. And we have no idea. Like to me, Eduardo Nunez is potentially a part-time player.
Yes.
We have no idea where he's going to land necessarily. But I'd rather have Miguel Cabrera than Eduardo Nunez. I'd rather have Miguel Cabrera than, Matt Olson, who was a guy I like, but is going inside the top 100, and I don't think that is.
Yeah, that's an obscene to me. I've always been an Olson fan too, and I think that's obscene. So I mean,
well, you can blame Eno Saris and Paul Sporer over at the at FanGraphs and the Sleeper and Buzz podcast because I think that has a lot to do with them.
I will possibly do that. I don't know. I respect them a lot. I don't want to start trashing picks. So.
No. I mean, I'm their producer, so feel free. They're not going to listen to us.
I don't know. They're a little too famous for me. Like, you're the step down from famous. Like, you're famous, but you're not, like,
if they're,
up at that
if they're
territory
like,
yet.
If they're, like, A fantasy baseball analysts, like A grade, I'm, like, a B grade, and you're, like...
No, I think you're, like, an A minus. And then me, I'm probably in more of the D plus, C minus area. I'm getting there, though. I mean, I started off as, like, a low F. So, I mean, I'm getting there.
All right. Why don't you give me someone you whiffed on this year?
Which one? I don't know how high to go yet. Let's go with Jose Peraza. I'm just sorry if you're listening to this and you took Jose Peraza based on my advice, then I apologize to you. he was a top 100 player last year, finished as I don't even know where he finished on the shortstop player rater, but I know it was outside the top 30. But yeah, I mean, he actually it was a 28. So right next to like Jonathan Villar. But I just I thought he would steal more bases, to be honest. And he ended up not being a good enough hitter to really get on base enough, which was all these warnings that I saw prior to the season starting. But I just pretty much decided not to really go with that advice and really thought that the stolen bases would be able to make up the value. So I went on Peraza going into this year. I'm still pretty high on him based on the stolen base potential, but I think we've kind of seen that he's not going to really get better in the batting average department, even despite having a couple of months last year where he did have .280 batting average. He had 3 stolen bases that month, and that was in August. He just doesn't have a good enough walk rate and a good enough contact rate for us to really project him to be on base enough to, get runs scored, and he won't be able to hit at the top of the lineup. And on top of that, like, he's probably not going to get the green light enough just because he's not on base enough. So despite the fact that I ignored all the warning signs, including not just from you, but from George Bissell, who I know was like super kind of weirded out by me liking Jose Peraza so much. It's just, other than the fact that he just couldn't get on base, I thought that he was going to end up getting, at least 30 plus stolen bases. And while he finished with 23 and it wasn't a complete zero to you, he still had double digit value in fantasy. $14 is definitely okay. The fact that I thought he would end up scoring more runs and certainly having a higher batting average certainly was kind of reasons that I definitely whiffed on him. So I'm still a little bit opportunistic with him, I would say. Like, I still think that there's an area to buy, but at the same time, I whiffed last year and I apologize.
Yeah, I don't think you should apologize too much. I mean, I think, don't get me wrong, he wasn't, some people were, advocating him as a top 100 player, and I can't remember if you were one of them or not, but...
Yes, I was.
At the end of the day, I mean, he hit .259, which isn't awful in today's game. He stole 23 bases. If you didn't, I know I got him in drafts outside of the top 150 at times, and, I'm totally fine with the return on investment at that point.
Yeah. Well,
it didn't win me a league, but, 23 stolen bases isn't a bad number in today's game, especially if you're playing in deeper formats.
Well, I play in on-base leagues mainly, and where I got him in on-base leagues, he was an almost negative. Just the fact that he was under .300 in on-base percentage, and I mentioned about his contact earlier. It's not that he doesn't make contact. He doesn't strike out at all. He just doesn't walk. He swings.
Yeah.
Freely and does not stop.
He actually has a decent contact percentage.
He has a great contact percentage.
Yeah, I mean,
it's 85%.
I mean, it's not bad. I mean, at the end of the day, too, I think he was a little bit unlucky. This was the first time in his career at virtually any level that he had a sub .300 BABIP. And I mean, this is a fast guy. I mean, this guy should be, over .300. I think there's a real chance next year he, hits .275 and steals 30 plus bags, and I don't think you're going to have to pay virtually anything for him.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I was making projections last year with him safely over 30 stolen bases and with a high batting average, so my projections had him going in the top 100 based on the lack of speed in the league. And he also in 2016 had 240 at bats, 21 stolen bases, .324 batting average. Yes, he had a inflated BABIP, but even with regression coming, I thought that his batting average would sit somewhere above .270, .280. So yeah, maybe looking into it a little bit more, he wasn't as bad of a whiff, but at least for the teams that I did have him on and paying that high of a pick, I couldn't use him to what I thought would be his full capabilities. So I have other guys I can give, but I mean, Peraza was one of the guys that a couple people kind of messaged me about. So I decided,
Well, why don't you go ahead and cheer yourself up a little bit and tell me someone you got right.
Let's see.
Give me one of the hits. Yeah.
Let's see. Everybody. I don't know.
Do you want me to go? Would that make you feel better? Cause I'll take one of the guys that you should talk about.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Lorenzo Cain, you and I both were super high on Lorenzo Cain coming into the year. He produced, he hit 300, .363, .440, had 15 home runs and 26 stolen bases. And I think that he is again going to be a little bit undervalued coming into next year. Obviously it depends on where he ends up, but I mean, you got to think at least for his power production that there's going to be an upgrade in Park unless he ends up in San Francisco, which I think actually could be a reasonable landing spot for him. But I think Cain was a guy that people maybe just got tired of in terms of waiting for him to have the breakout year and kind of downgraded him based on a poor 2016, but he was hurt. And those of you out there screaming, well, he always gets hurt. Well, he's put up, at least 500 plate appearances in 3 of the last 4 years, 600 in at least 2 of the last 3 years. So I think it's pretty safe to say that, he's a guy that you can rely on to get to 600 plate appearances or so. And I think next year we're looking at a guy who's going to, again, do what he's done in 2 of the last 3 years, which is hit 15, plus home runs and steal 25 plus bases and do it with a really nice average. And I think you don't have to pay an extreme amount for that. And I'm going to be all aboard the Lorenzo Cain bandwagon once again.
Huh. Well, I'll definitely, it depends on where Kane always goes. That's obviously, where I always am with him.
For sure.
The year before, I was down on him based on where he was going because of his injury pass. Mm-hmm. But last year, he was going at a very decent cost. So that's why I was back in. And it's all relative to how much a player costs and, you know, where you can get them and et cetera. So, but we'll see where Kane goes. Where was he going in your early Mason mocks?
My Mason mocks. Let's see. He was going as the 88. He was going around pick 88.
That's fair.
In between 88 and 89. I think that's totally fair. Like, I'll give you some would-you-rathers. Would you rather have Lorenzo Cain, or would you rather have Gregory Polanco's going about 10 picks later?
Gregory Polanco I thought of as being one of my whiffs. I definitely whiffed on him last year, but I probably would go Polanco based on age.
Okay. And I think that's fair. I think I would go Cain based on track record.
Mm-hmm.
Would you rather have Chris Davis with a K or Lorenzo Cain?
Ooh, kind of depends on what I'm looking for, but probably K-Riss Davis based on the consistency at this point.
I think I'm going to go with Kane in the speed. But I think the argument can go either way. Would you rather have a guy who is not an outfielder, Xander Bogaerts?
Ooh, I probably would have Bogaerts. I think that he's in for a different season than last year.
Okay, well, I'm going to start moving down the list because you seem to be maybe lower on him. Would you rather have Kane or Joey Gallo?
Kane.
Okay. Kane or Matt Olson?
Kane.
Kane or Didi Gregorius?
I can't even keep a straight face. Is Matt Olson seriously being taken in the top 100? Like,
He is. I wouldn't do it, but, I mean, there are – I mean, he went as high as 67th off the board. I mean
– MG.
He went 67th, 84th, 110, and 113. I don't think
who
I
took
could,
him 67th?
I don't know. It was in the second mock, so, I mean, I could probably figure that out.
Someone of either, I'm not going to start calling names, but I have ideas.
give me 1 second I'll figure it out for you. But, let's see,
Didier Gregorius, I would take Kane over Gregorius.
All right. Let's see in the second mock, where are we at? Mock 2, 67th pick, was Rob Silver, an NFBC champion that you're bad-mouthing right now.
I'm not bad-mouthing anybody. I stand by Rob Silver, so. No, I liked Matt Olson a few years ago, and then I really fell off based on plate skills and stuff. I didn't watch a ton of them last year because I'm not an Oakland A's guy, and, you know, whenever I'm catching up on games later on, the A's typically aren't a team that I'm watching a ton of, but he's obviously a very intelligent individual, so there's something that he's seeing, so I'll definitely dive back in. I'm intrigued why he took him above it. It might have been a statement pick, but we'll see. He probably is.
I don't think a guy like Rob Silver needs to make a statement pick. I mean,
that's
dude,
true.
Dude made a statement by winning the NFBC overall.
Yeah, main event, yeah. I mean... I agree.
So,
I'll talk about a clump of guys that I hit on last year. It was a trio of third basemen, Jake Lamb, Nick Castellanos, and Mike Moustakas. Hit on all three of them. They all were solid contributors at third base that you could have gotten later last year. So I, you know, praise to you if you ended up choosing one of, or maybe two of the three. I know Castellanos started off the year pretty bad, but all three did what they needed to do. In terms of this year, I'm probably the lowest on Moustakas just because I don't know where he goes.
But anywhere he goes is going to be a better power environment for him.
Sure, and he made some adjustments last year.
And I keep saying this about all the Kansas City guys, but it's true. Kansas City has like one of the most, you know, pitcher-friendly stadiums in all of baseball. I mean, unless, again, and the Giants, you know, especially with the breaking news during this podcast, Giancarlo Stanton has officially, or the Giants have said that Giancarlo Stanton have told them he will not waive his no trade to go to San Francisco. The Giants will likely try to be in on guys like Moustakas and Lorenzo Cain. But, I mean, outside of that opportunity, anywhere Mike Moustakas goes is going to be an upgrade in terms of park.
In terms of
power hitting. So,
I've always loved Moustakas. He made his kind of drastic changes and adjustments to his swing these last couple of years, which have generated more power, obviously. We'll have to see. You know, we'll have to see where I like to know where people go, not just because of the ballpark, but I like to just know where they fit in the lineup. And also, this is the first team that Moustakas and Hosmer, for that matter, are going to other than Kansas City. You know, they've been born and raised in this Kansas City world, and free agents are always kind of risky based on where they go. So we'll see what happens with Moustakas. But I do think that what Castellanos and Lamb, while they might not have higher upsides than Moustakas long term and even as far as next year, I think that we can bet on them repeating what they did last year. And really, Jake Lamb, while I say he's a hit, he didn't have a great batting average, but he still hit 30 plus bombs. And that's really what we were expecting and hoping from him. Did he really cure his ills against lefties? No. And he's not somebody that you probably should use as a full time player. But between the three of them, I look at all three as wins, and especially from a third base position that's remained fairly deep. The fact that you can grab some of those guys and pass on somebody like Machado last year, you know, whether you played him at short or third, was probably a pretty big win. I do want to talk about Francisco Lindor, though, because I know you and I both were not on board last year. And I just want to know your thoughts on where you would take Lindor right now based on what he did last season.
Oh, that would be a really difficult. That's a difficult thing for me.
How about this? Do you think over under next year, 280 batting average?
Over
under 20 home runs.
Over,
he had 33 last year.
Over, but barely. I think I'm projecting 23 to 25.
Over under 15 stolen bases.
Under.
Okay, so you think that he goes 22, 280-ish with somewhere around 13 stolen bases?
Yeah.
Something like that?
I think
yeah,
15
so that's
is
a third-round player.
I think he's a second or third-round player.
Yeah.
And, like, I just, to me, you know, he's never been a guy I like, and I actually prefer him to go, you know, and I don't know if he will go back to what he was in 2016 and 2015, I'd rather him steal me more bases and hit for a higher average than sell out for power.
Well, and that's what kind of happened with him at the beginning of the season last year. You know, the first half last year, he only had 3 stolen bases. He had 14 home runs. The second half, though, I mean, I would love to see the player rater or anybody's player rater in the second half, because he had to have been a first-round player. He hit 19 home runs and had 12 stolen bases with close to a 300 batting average.
Yeah.
Also, he had 55 runs scored. So you're looking at a guy, 50 RBIs as well. Like, that's a first round player, maybe even top six pick player in the second half. So somebody like me, for instance, I like to look at second half and kind of look at it kind of continuing into the next year a lot of times if the situation doesn't change and everything kind of remains the same. And I mean, I just feel like either a lot of people whiffed really hard on Lindor's overall offensive upside, or he regresses in a big way. I mean, in the mocks that you guys did, he went 22nd.
And I think that's fair. I think that's right about where he should be going.
Yeah, I you know, it's very rare where I change my tune on somebody, but I might actually change my tune on Lindor based on the skills that he's displayed. He has an amazing contact rate. The batting average is safe. The fact that he kind of changed his batted ball profile significantly last year, he's hitting way more fly balls, generating more power out of those fly balls. He's still stealing bases. The fact that he stole 12 bases in the second half tells me that he's still going to steal. Cleveland does like to run a bit. So, like, overall, I just wanted to get your take on him, but I think he's fairly safe.
All right. I'm going to finish out on my kind of miss last, and then we'll close things out, because I got to run and go do some stuff. Kevin Gausman, he got better at the end of the year. He changed some things. And so I actually think he's kind of a buy low for this year, but man, I was all over Kevin Gausman once again. And once again, he disappointed me. For those people who invested highly in him, in the same way that I did, I definitely apologize, because more than likely, you dropped him before he got better at the second half of the year. And so you never even got the kind of the improvements that we saw. But, I mean, what do you make of Kevin Gausman? Do you think – I know you've been a big fan like I have, and the second half was a hell of a lot better, you know, almost 10 strikeouts per nine, kept his walks per nine under 3. The ERA came down. The whip came down. Do you think that what we're going to see in the future is – much more of the second half as opposed to the really atrocious first half?
I think we see more of the same, which in a nutshell, in one word, is inconsistency, in my opinion. So he really keeps the same pitch mix. Like, we're never going to see him really dive out of that. He's going to remain a heavy fastball guy, which his fastball is great. I love you know, how great his velocity is and where he kind of places it and everything. But he's a fastball splitter slider guy. That's what he's going to be. So I think that he is going to run some problems like he always does. And, you know, last year against both sides, like, he gave up a 288 batting average to righties and a 275 average to lefties. That's a problem. 800 OPS to both sides as well. So I think we're going to see more of the same, like, just inconsistency. Like, the second half, despite him having a 349 ERA from July on, he still, you know, in August wasn't that great, you know, despite the 3.48 ERA. He's just, I forever will love Kevin Gausman, but there's no way that I can really rely on him in fantasy anymore. I think that he's just going to be a guy that we'll be able to get strikeouts from and we'll be able to get some type of quality innings from at some point, but he's just going to be really hard to project. So overall, inconsistent.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get suckered back in. I mean, Matthew Berry on the old Fantasy Focus, you know, podcast.
Kryptonite.
Yeah, Fantasy Kryptonite. And, I mean, Kevin Gausman is my guy. And every year he puts up these awful numbers, but he does just enough to reel me back in. And I'm going to fall for it. I'm just going to say it right now. I'm going to fall for it. We'll talk about him less on this podcast just so I don't pass on, you know, my love too much to the point where people start, you know, who listen to me start really buying in. But he's a guy that I will continue to fall for now and forever.
He's going later in your mocks than he did last year in NFBC by about 25 picks. So, you know, there might be a buying opportunity here. Gausman has the goods. Like, it's never been a question about the talent. It's more or less him being able to command his pitches. And maybe he found a way to do that last year in the second half in particular. But there's still kind of bumps in the road. I mean, he's just, from a start-to-start basis, he had a lot more disaster outings, the dominance, you know, based on the HQ rating system that they do, which, you know, I pretty much specialize in. So he, you know, again, in the second half, he kind of ride the ship a bit, especially on, you know, from like July 19th to August 4th, he had, you know, five straight starts where he gave up, you know, one earned run or less. And that's really nice to see, also with eight strikeouts or more. So, like, he has those stretches where you're just like, okay, well, here's the ace that we thought he could be. And then there's other times where he gives up eight runs and 0.2 innings where you're like, okay, well, I don't know about this. So.
Well, and I mean, if you're looking from that, you know, that July 19th start on, you know, like I said, I mean, 9.45 strikeouts per nine, sub three walks per nine. He had 270 ERA. I mean, you know, obviously that's going, you know, his FIP and XFIP were like 3.7, 3.6 area. But I mean, if you're getting a guy who's striking out that many people at like a 3.4, 3.5 ERA, that's a pretty valuable pitcher in these day and ages, and I'm going to always buy back in on that upside, especially if people are like you and are out. You know, there's been enough people in this industry who've touted this guy. I mean, you know, Paul Spohr, you know, has been a big proponent of his. You and I have been big proponents of his. Lots of guys in the industry. And a lot of those guys have influenced people into buying him on draft day, and they've now gotten burnt for, like, what, 3 or 4 or 5, 6, 7 feels like 20 seasons in a row. So I get why people why there will be a ton of people out on him. But for me, that just increases the probability he's going to end up on a ton of my teams because I like the price.
Yeah, I like the price too. I'm definitely not out on him. I just think that you have to go into it recognizing that he's going to be inconsistent. And yeah, that's not like a hot take, but the fact that he has such a good strikeout upside, like, we will always be buying back in. I will always love Gausman. I'll always have an affinity for him. We'll see what happens. Like, the last 2 years, he has gone 180 innings. So that's something good to look at. I mean, somebody that you can rely on for innings. Some of them might be inconsistent, but, like, I disagree with his value being less than where he was going last year. I feel like he should be going about the same spot, maybe a little bit higher.
Okay. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Mike, why don't you tell people what you're working on, where you can be reached?
Yeah, just getting ready for the upcoming season. Really excited about the draft guide. I'm going to be participating heavily in that and all the team previews. And even this week on the Monday show, I'll be around. So I'm on vacation for my full-time job, so I'll be able to kind of partake in FWFB way more than it has been the last few months. So I'm excited about that, and I'll be continuing to write for Baseball HQ this season. And for those of you that, you know, I guess earplugs, if you earmuffs if you don't like fantasy football, but those of you in fantasy football playoffs, good luck to you. Hope everything works out this week. And yeah, follow me on Twitter at Mike Warner FWFB,
and you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can hear me here, you can hear me on the Towers Hour Thursdays from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern with Laura Michaels. You can hear me, you can hear me sometimes in the background chuckling on Sleeper in the Bus Style, where I produce that for Eno Saris and Paul Spohr and Jason Collette. You can also read all the things I write at Fangraphs, Friends with Fantasy Benefits, and Fantasy Alarm. And I'm going to be announcing something really cool coming up really soon. I've just got to kind of finish putting it all together, but it is something different that is in the works, another place you'll be able to kind of follow some more of my work and something that is a little bit different than maybe other people in the industry are doing. So definitely stay tuned for that, and stay tuned for all the cool things over at Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Like I said, we're going to be doing a draft guide. We're adding new voices. And if you are interested in becoming one of those voices, if you want to write or you want to podcast Friends of Fantasy Benefits, we give people opportunities to do that. You don't have had any experience. We will try anybody out. We will give people an opportunity. We feel that Friends of Fantasy Benefits has been a great place for people to learn. And some of our writers have gone on to write for some of the best publications in the industry, Baseball HQ, Baseball Perspectives, Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm. A lot of our guys now write for other places. So if you've ever had the itch and thought, oh, I can do this better than them, email me at justinmasonfantasy@gmail.com or friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com, and send me a writing sample or send me something that says, hey, I'm interested in doing this, and we will try to carve out a place for you at Friends of Fantasy Benefits. At worst, it's a really, really fun staff chat to be a part of.
And you get to interact with one of the most famous people in the fantasy industry.
Matt Thompson. Yeah.
And be a part of the Mason Mocks.
Yeah.
The M&Ms.
Exactly. So that's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Mike and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball offseason.